And now, the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak, episode 24.
Hey everyone, some announcements. Have you noticed that Superhero Speak hasn't been coming out every Wednesday? Or there's been another show in our stream, and that's Agents of Speak? Well, that's because on YouTube, live every Tuesday, we are doing a YouTube show. And we're airing right after Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. airs on the East Coast. And what we're doing is we're sitting down talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a wrap-up show. Talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., what we liked, what we didn't like about the episode, and we give it a quick rating. We'll be having guest hosts on there. We have a new host that will be with us. Go and check us out. Subscribe to the channel and like our videos. That being said, we're also releasing that as an audio podcast, and it's in the same RSS feed as Superhero Speak. So we're not sure if we're going to continue doing that. If you're enjoying those audio podcasts, let us know and we'll keep doing it. Otherwise, it may become just a video podcast. All right, now this coming weekend, October 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th, I will be at New York Comic Con. I will be in Artist Alley, and you'll be able to know who I am because I'll be in a Superhero Speak t-shirt. I don't have a table, but I'll be walking around talking to different artists and trying to get some coverage for you, our listeners, and I'll have a New York Comic Con episode airing after I get back. So keep an ear out for that. And if you see me at the show, stop by and say hello. This episode is writer James Maddox. If you remember a little while ago, we had artist Steve Scott on the podcast, and he kept talking about a new book he's working on. He's really excited about, called Blue Nemesis. Well, James is the writer behind that book. And I got a chance to check out some of his work, a book called Clown. And I have to say, James is a brilliant writer, and I can see why Steve is really excited about this book. So we rushed at the chance to have him on the show. We sat down with him and had a great conversation, and we hope you enjoy. So, here we go. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak. I'm your host, Dave.
And John.
And this week, we have a special guest with us. If you remember, a couple episodes ago, we had artist Steve Scott with us. And he kept raving about a project that he's currently working on called Blue Nemesis. And in that time, I've contacted the writer of Blue Nemesis, and we've been emailing back and forth. And I've got to read some of his work, and I have to say that I think he's one of the best writers I've ever read, and we were lucky enough to get him on the podcast this week. So everyone, welcome James Maddox.
Hello, thank you. I'll give you that 20 afterwards for saying that.
I mean it all. Like I said, Clown, I think, is one of the best things I've read in a while.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came up with that idea just because I was riding around with a friend of mine, and I was like, have you ever seen a steampunk clown? And he's like, no. I was like, me either. I'm going to write a story about that. So,
okay. Wow, that's how it works, I guess, right?
Yeah, you come up with the hook, and then you go and find the premise from there.
Right. I don't think a lot of our listeners probably aren't familiar with your work.
Oh yeah, I would imagine a lot of your listeners aren't familiar with my work. So, I can give you a rundown.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
can you kind of who I am?
Yeah.
Okay, so in 2009, my friend Eric Watkins and I decided that we wanted to make comic books, and we kind of combined forces and created this little studio, small, you know, independent label called Broken Icon Comics. And we both went on to create some really fun stuff. I did Nightmare Unknown with artist Rob Dumo. Dumo, incidentally, went on to do, I think, one of the Robin Hood books for Zenoscope.
Oh, yes.
And the colorist, actually, fun fact, the colorist for issues 2 and 3 of Nightmare Unknown was Vladimir Popov, who's now working on Hellraiser with Boom Studios.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Anyway, so Broken Icon still is, you know, doing its thing. I personally am coming out with a book called The Horror Show, which with Todd Beisel, who we've been getting some amazing reviews on that one. It's really humbling, actually. But basically what you have is, you know, this kind of small start that's slowly snowballing, you know, into hopefully something a little bit bigger. Because, you know, with Eric and I, when we started Broken Icon, we knew that it was just kind of a way to get in the door, you know,
right.
a way for us to be added to those hundreds, thousands of people that are waving their arms in the comic industry trying to get noticed.
Right, right. So if we back up a little bit, because you started in 2009, have you always wanted to be a writer?
Yes. I started writing short stories and novels. Excuse me. And I discovered that it took me, like, I think 3 years to finish a novel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But all the while, I was pumping out comic scripts, like you know, just like nothing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of found my calling that way, realizing that I could either, you know, write a book and take a long time and not really go anywhere with it because I wasn't confident in it, you know.
Right.
But with comic books, like, I've always been kind of a visual storyteller, and I feel more confident about my comic scripts than anything else.
Cool. So, I guess that's what I'm asking, too, was that just a conscious choice, or have you always been, a comic book fan and...
Yeah.
Sorry, that's the dog. Probably someone outside.
Is he trying to answer the question? Or?
No, I've always been a fan of comic books. I went on a hiatus there for a while. And then in college, I met up with a guy that just had bookshelves of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just started kind of... not stealing, but borrowing, you know, from his collection. And from there, you know, it just kind of became second nature to pick up a comic book before I picked up anything else.
Cool. Are you going to turn any of the stuff that you were writing in you said you were writing a book. Are you going to turn those ideas into the comics? Is that?
Actually, yes. In 2007, I wrote this book called The Dead. And I mean, it was huge. It was probably the longest book I've ever written, and put it away in a desk, and it's sitting in that same desk now. But about a year ago, I met up with an artist named Jen Hickman, who we met at Baltimore Comic Con, and I was telling her about the different things I wanted to do. And one of them was, because I really like the story of the dead. But one of them was that story, and I told her about it, and she instantly kind of, you know, locked onto it. And we've started producing it, and I think we're putting up a page a week on my personal site. The next page is coming up Tuesday, actually. And we've got about 40-some pages, like, already finished, colored, lettered. Everything's looking beautiful. She's an amazing artist.
Yeah, actually, I looked at some of the some of that work, and it's really well done. Are you guys going to it's that kind of painted style.
Yeah.
Which I dig. Are you guys going to put them together at the end and, like, do a bound copy or an electronic copy?
Yeah, we've put together the pitch project or the package.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been sending it out to other indie publishers, and we're hoping that after Baltimore, this year's Baltimore Comic Con, that we'll get some replies, and if nobody picks it up, then we'll go ahead and, you know, release it ourselves.
Cool.
But yeah, and then, you know, all this builds up. The way that I'm hoping that all of this works is that, you know, you start small, you know, with Nightmare Unknown and The Horror Show, and you kick it up to something like The Dead and Clown, and then you got, you know, Steve and I's book, Blue Nemesis, which... The thing about working with Steve is that even if my story was terrible, they would look at that art and just, you know, fawn over. I took it with me to Boston Comic Con, showed it to a few people I was hoping to impress, and just automatically they're like, "Oh yeah, this is what people should be doing," you know?
Right.
And the way that, you know, Steve came about was, you know, Eric and I were doing shows with Broken Icon, and Eric just so happened to be getting to be friends with Steve, because you talk to Steve, he's just the nicest person in existence. Yes. You know, and I was telling Eric about this story I had. It wasn't called Blue Nemesis at that time, it was called something probably really ridiculous. But I told Eric about it, and he happened to mention it to Steve. And I guess, you know, Steve latched on to it, and we talked about it a little bit more. And the next thing you know, I've got, you know, the opening page and the big splash, you know, that kind of knocked me off my socks, or knocked me out of my socks, maybe.
That's cool. I mean, it's, you know, I've always wanted to do my hand at writing, but I'm always afraid to get started, you know, just finding the right, because with an art, you know, comic writing, and finding an artist is a that, you know, number one, A, you can trust, and B, is willing to work with you, you know, within whatever budget or time frame or you right. want to work in. And but yeah, I mean, that's got to be an amazing feeling when someone like Steve, you know, comes along and does that for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, it's awesome because I hope it says a little bit about my writing, you know. At this stage in the game, that I'm able to interest someone with a premise that's mine that probably has other offers on the table, you know, and he's using his time to create this piece of artwork.
No, I definitely was going to say that. I mean, again, what I've read so far blew me away. And so I can definitely see why someone like Steve would jump on a project that you're working on. Yeah. You know.
But, you know, it's all about, as far as finding, I mean, that's kind of what we've been leaning toward more and more with Broken Icon is helping other creators find other creators, you know? So, mm-hmm. you know, helping artists meet writers and, you know, artists and writers meet letterers if they need that. We can do editorial kind of stuff. I mean, it's all kind of helping that community grow together, because you're asking me about writing books and maybe why I started gravitating more to comics, besides the whole, you know, I can write really fast in the comic medium. Mm-hmm. There aren't really, it doesn't feel as community oriented as a comics, you know, line of work. When you're just sitting in your desk or, you know, sitting at your desk and writing a book, you get kind of stir crazy, whereas with comic books I can go to conventions all over the U.S. hell, all over the world, right. You know, and go out and meet people who have an interest in creating things and you know, making their mark in this kind of medium that we all have some sort of reverence for. I kind of come across as a zealot because I talk so highly of what the comics can do, you know, and I cite books that half the people I'm talking to don't even care to read, you know?
And I was going to say, that's, I totally am there with you. It might've been our second or third episode. I had a friend of mine on, Shane Moore, who's a comic book artist, and, he created a book called The Omens, and I met him like 3 years ago, and he had the first book out, and you know, he was still working on the second issue, you know.
Yeah.
And he did his own print, and his own imprint, and that, you know, does it himself. But one of the things we were talking about is, you know, I find it amazing that you can go to a convention and you walk down Artist Alley and half of the people there are on their own doing their own books, but they're not thinking, let's network together.
Right.
You know, and grow the power of this so we can sell our books to more people, yeah. You know. And so yeah. To hear you say you're doing stuff like that, it, you know, I tip my hat to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all came together really kind of organically. Because, you know, like Eric and I have contributed or, you know, co-written books together and then went out and found artists. Like we did this weird little short story that I came up with, like, some of the concept for, and Eric came up with some of the concept for, called Grocery Assassin. And the idea, I'll run through it real quick because I don't know how much time we have, but the idea was, you know, you have two assassins. Assassins got to eat, and to eat they go buy stuff at a grocery store. So you got these two assassins, rival assassins, that meet each other in a Walmart, and they just kind of lock eyes and open fire. And from there, it goes from them trying to kill each other, and a civilian gets caught in the crossfire, and they kind of make a game out of who can have the most interesting kill. So it's really dark humor. I'd also suggest it for readers who don't like dark humor, but right. it was fun, and Tristan Kelly kind of brought it to life. But that all came together because we were at a comic show, and Tristan was sitting right next to us, and, you know, we talked to him, you know. That's right, all it right. takes. That's all it takes. You just approach somebody and talk to them.
It sounds like the plot of any given Black Friday that I've ever been to.
That's right. The community of comics is really great. And, you know, we took it a step further. Did you guys know about the Tri-State Comic Con?
I haven't heard of it until you told me about it.
Yeah, the thing was, Eric and I do a lot of stuff together in comics, but we decided that we wanted to take it a little bit further. We've been going, we're those kind of guys that if we are exposed to something long enough, we dissect it, you know?
Right.
And we kind of pick it apart, and we went to so many shows that we were like, yeah, we could do this. And so we created a comic convention.
Okay.
And we had our second year this past April, and I think we brought in, I mean, it's in Huntington, West Virginia, so, like, it's not going to be, like, astronomical crowds, but we brought in 1,800 people, and that's pretty good for this area. And we just announced that we've got Gail Simone as an exclusive for next year. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's cool. I actually I've been volunteering at conventions since 2006.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of friends in that world who are coordinators and whatnot, and it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is a ton of work. I know that I couldn't do it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to have somebody to kind of bounce ideas, and Eric really takes huge initiatives going after people, and he's like this social butterfly, you know. It's really funny, people make fun of us because when we're at shows, I'll be sitting with a notepad and just, like, grunt answers and yeah, sure, whatever, but Eric's out there like, hey, how's it going, what are you doing, you know. So yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you have to constantly keep on it, and, you know, it's more than anything, I think it shows a desire to both promote comics and to really make this what we want to do, you know, with our time.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, if I could, if I could make this the podcast my day job, I would.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the other thing that you have to kind of hope for, because everybody's hoping to get noticed, you know? And I was, he may not remember this, but I was talking to Justin Jordan at HeroesCon this past HeroesCon, out on a sidewalk out in front of the hotel. And I was like, everybody keeps asking me, how'd you break into comics? Like, it was some magic, you know, incantation that he said. And then, hey, I made it, you know, Luther Strode's going great. And so is Shadow Man. Woohoo. He's like, but my answer is really, I busted my ass for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then got really lucky, you know?
No, that's how it works with anything.
Yeah. So, like, podcasts and things like that. I mean, you're slowly growing your audience.
Right.
With every episode that you put out there, especially if it's quality, you know? But for me, I'm just hoping to continue to put out good stories. And eventually I'll get people saying that they're either really good, like they've done with the horror show and Nightmare Unknown and the Dead. And then I'll continue to show people who I want to work with, like Steve, you know, hey, this is what I've done before, and people seem to like it, so I must have some, you know, talent. So, yay. Let's start a book.
So, one of the things I wanted to ask you, the couple things I've looked at, you know, The Dead and Clown, they're not your typical superhero-style comics.
Yeah.
Is that...
That's kind of a bane, actually, right now, because I would really love the chance. I've got a lot of killer stories in my head for some DC characters.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that I don't have any superhero comics to show off right now.
Okay. No, because I was going to ask, do you not like writing superhero comics? But
no, I love it. Okay. I've written a few. I haven't found the right artist to kind of put them together. Rob Dumo, the artist that did Nightmare Unknown, we kind of came up with a superhero story that he might have time for in the future. He might not. I don't know. But no, I definitely enjoy superheroes. And I don't know. I think it's just I'm kind of crossing my fingers on this, that this is true. But I'm hoping that I'm noticing that people like DC are hiring people like Robert Venditti, who did The Surrogates, mm-hmm. you know. He got hired on to do Valiant, I imagine, from The Surrogates, which was not a superhero book.
Right, right.
You know, so I'm thinking that maybe publishers are just looking for someone who can hook you with a good story.
I think that's true.
If that's not the case, then, oh, man. I got to change gears on that. But more and more, you see, I mean, I was talking to Scott Snyder, and I asked him, you know, how he got started, and he was saying that I think it was Marvel were looking at people who were published in this anthology that he had written short stories for,
mm-hmm.
and asking, you know, do any of you want to write comic books? And he was like, yeah, I'll do that. So
when asked if you're a god, you say yes.
Yeah, right.
who would say no to that, really?
Yeah, I would imagine that there's that one snobby lit guy that's like, comic books. Funny books.
I'm a real writer.
I'm a real writer. That's right. How dare you, sir?
Well, everyone remember that Stan Lee wanted to write novels and was just doing comic books until he could take off with novels.
Yeah, imagine that.
You know, and it's funny, though, speaking of writers in DC, DC does have a history of using writers who aren't traditionally comic book writers, too, as well. Like, Jeff Loeb is a great example.
Yeah.
You know, he started out as a screenwriter and then, you know, gave us The Long Halloween and all those great books. So,
yeah.
And now he directs all the Marvel cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know. It's amazing how writers end up doing that gig, you know, of writing for the big two. Some of them just kind of have worked at it their entire lives, knowing that they wanted to do that. Some of them were offered the opportunity and just kind of snatched it out of the air. So there's no way to break into the business without making it up as you go along, I guess.
Right. I mean, with anything, it's, you know, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration.
Yeah.
You want something, you got to work at it.
Yeah.
So
and that's
what
the fun part. Oh, no, I was going to say that's the fun part of getting it all out
and
there.
A lot of the people we've talked to, it sounds like it's mainly just a labor of love. You just keep at it. I mean, there isn't one person we've talked to that hasn't started out with, well, I liked drawing and you know, and I just drew for like, you know, DeviantArt for 4 years and then, you know, whatever. Dude,
go to a comic convention, walk up and down Artist Alley and be like, hey, how much money are you making from this project that you've got on your table?
Yeah.
I would pay you $100 if you found someone that was like, yeah, I'm making my living doing this.
Yeah.
It's not happening, you know?
Well, hence the reason they're at the con. They're selling their stuff so they can,
But, I mean, even beyond that, I met a guy that was paying more for his books more than he was selling them for, because he just wanted to get them into readers' hands, you know? Which is, yeah, I mean, it's, there's different ways to go about it, and I certainly wouldn't choose that for myself. But once again, it's that labor of love, that the goal isn't to make boatloads of cash as much as it is to kind of show your stuff.
Right.
Oh, go ahead. I was done with that thought. I was going to do a weak segue into something else, but...
Well, I was about to do a weak segue.
Awesome.
You know, speaking of superheroes and different writers, and after reading your stuff, I want to ask you who some of your influences are. What are some of the stories that have influenced you?
Oh God. Well, Calvin and Hobbes.
Joyce, good choice.
Yeah, no. As far as comic book writers go, I had, when we started talking about doing Tricon, I made this joke that was, I wanted to just pay Warren Ellis a lot of money and put him. We got this space; it's like 55,000 square feet for Tricon, and I wanted to rent it all and just put a little chair in the middle of it and sit Warren Ellis in that chair.
Okay,
and that's all we need, really. But no, Warren Ellis has been a big inspiration with Transmetropolitan. I think I read through that at least once a year because I can't get enough of it, really. Because, mm-hmm. I'm not like totally insane, but I have a journalism background. I've written for a lot of newspapers and kind of gravitated more toward the whole journalism thing with Transmet. You know, there's always the kind of standard go-tos of The Watchmen and, you know, a lot of Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman stuff. Neil Gaiman actually was probably the big thing that got me hooked onto comics.
Okay, I was going to actually say, Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman just because I got that feel from reading Clown. Like,
yeah,
this guy definitely likes The Watchmen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always been the writers who, I mean, there's always going to be the writers that kind of come out with the stuff and they tell the story and they toe the line. But the writers that just kick the door down, man, that's what you aim for every single time. That's what you aim for, is to write a story that will change people's idea of how serious they should be taking comic books. Every time I find a writer like that, I go out of my way and read more and more of their stuff.
Yes, definitely. I mean, that's, you know, Watchmen changed a lot of things, I think. And, yeah. You know, and that's, again, I love the feel in Clown where you have the story of your main character, a down on his luck person forced into a situation. And, but through that, through the events that are happening, you realize there's a more complicated backstory going on here than just a down on his luck guy, but you're not throwing it in your face. It's a very well crafted story.
Yeah. You know? I like doing different modes of storytelling. So for Clown, we've got the 30 pages of that main story or that first story arc, mm-hmm. ready. Brandon's working on it right now. Who's doing amazing work as well. I got to throw a shout out to Brandon. But I've also written a newspaper for it. And I'm talking like a full tabloid size, you know, made on newsprint newspaper that is just stories from this world that I've dreamed up. And we've printed it out on newsprint. I think we got 2,000 copies sitting in my office right now. So that when we finish the book, we have this extra piece of promotion to go along with the world and, you know, hopefully interchange with ideas and stuff. So the story that you've been looking at is just a segment of that world, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know that it's all that thought out, because I did sit down and map a lot of it out. But I mean, even with Blue Nemesis, you're going to find journal entries and newspaper clippings kind of scattered throughout the book that let you know that there is just a whole big world beyond what you're seeing on this planet, you know, that the people are marooned on. So when I say that I write fast comic wise, that doesn't skimp on the details,
right?
Because, you know, I know the baseline story that will make a tale go mainstream, I guess you would say. But while I've got that story down pat, I'm backlogging all this detailed information that, you know, you might like the initial story idea, but if you wanted to dig into it, you could, and I'll give you that opportunity. And I think that that's what really every comic book writer should be doing. That's why I'm really kind of interested in working with, you know, people that have those universes set up, because that backstory is just there, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what made Arkham Asylum or Arkham City a good game, is because you could play through the original storyline, but they had all this stuff in there that you could spend hours and hours and hours reading through and discovering and finding. And, you know, the gamers, I'm a gamer, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. I think we're all gamers.
The gamers that played it enjoyed it even more because it was like total immersion, you know, or at least the possibility to be total immersion. And then the guys that just wanted, or the guys and gals, sorry, that wanted to play just the game where you kick butt as Batman could do that too. So it's providing this kind of dual experience where, you know, people can get what they want out of it.
Well, you know, deep world building and Easter eggs, that's pure geek lure right there.
Exactly.
I mean, especially if you did two comic books and one had references to things that you saw in the other and vice versa. You know, I've heard that, and, you know, stuff like when the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was actually their mutation was caused by the same stuff that made Daredevil blind. It's never spoken, but it's actually implied in the very first issue. So it's stuff like that really gets a, you know, comic book geek going.
Yeah. And talking about influences, I know he's not a comic writer really, but my go-to is always Stephen King.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Because King, he did that. He gave readers, you know, the casual readers, what they wanted, but then he created the, you know, the Dark Tower series to tie in so many branches of his stories together that you could, I mean, really, you could spit. There have been books written about it on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
That's what interests me, is finding. I'm really happy when readers come up to me and they say, oh, I really like this story. But if I have enough time and, you know, enough of a library 10 years down the road, it's going to be even better when people start picking up the Easter eggs.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, just to, you know, harken back a little bit to Alan Moore, I mean, and Watchmen, like,
yeah,
that's another great blueprint in the sense of, you know, the journal entries. You know, a lot of people just read the comic pages and don't read all the backstory pieces.
Yeah, they don't read under the hood, or, you know, the things
under the hood
chapters.
Right.
And not only that, but all the little things he throws in there, like the Gunga Diner and the shadows on the back of the walls, like, all, you know, all of those are written into the script.
Right.
And when I was starting to study, you know, comic scripting, because there's no universal way of doing comics. You can sit down and read, you know, DC's guide to, you know, writing comics or whatever, but that's just a suggestion.
Right.
I've seen scripts that are just two lines of, you know, guy A fights guy B, and then they go through a door, and then there's a kitchen, and they're fighting in the kitchen now. Just figure it out. You fucking do it. You know, I'm sorry. I don't know if I was allowed to cuss.
That's fine.
But yeah, it's kind of a really lazy way of writing about it. But when I script, I mean, it's a full script, and I love tossing in those little details that, even if I don't know why I'm putting them in there right at that moment, I can use them down the line. You know?
So it's the Joss Whedon school of world building, where no real obscure plot point ever gets wasted.
Right. Because, I mean, that's, once again, those are branches. And even if they're not fully developed, that's not to say you can't go back and be like, oh yeah, that one little thing I put in this issue, you know, let's go back and make that fresh. And then that really carries your series a little bit further as far as longevity goes.
Right. No, definitely. I mean, the more little pieces you put in, the more things people can discover, the more you can build off of those little pieces. You know, it's funny because a lot of people don't like loose ends, but I think good writers put enough loose ends in where it's not bothersome, but you can easily go, oh, you know what? I can write an offshoot of that story.
Yeah. And comic books, if anything else, comic books are made for loose ends.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the whole idea of the periodical, you have to have a way of keeping it fresh and keeping it going. So why not throw a few loose ends in there and know that hopefully you can go back and make them as interesting as the story you were first telling, you know?
Right. I thought one of the greatest tricks that a writer ever pulled was Secret Invasion, when Bendis did Secret Invasion. Have you ever heard the story behind that?
No.
I was at Philly Comic Con, and I was at the panel where they were introducing it. The first time they were talking about it to a crowd, and all the writers were like, yeah, Bendis would suggest us doing this here or that here or this here. And we realized all those pieces were connected together. It had been going on for like 6 years. And all those little loose ends were all leading up to his story for Secret Invasion. You know, so it all tied together in that way. And it wasn't, you know, and it wasn't an accident. And yet at the time, it looked that way.
Right.
You know?
That's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the advantages, I guess, when you get to play in the big sandbox like that.
Right.
You can easily set something like that up. But it was brilliant that the way he did it. And all the writers were complimenting him on that. It's funny because apparently they mentioned it there, but I didn't realize we just had John Sutter on the show. That episode hasn't gone up yet, but he's the creative art director at Marvel, and he said that, you know, once a year they have a big retreat where all the writers get together and they talk about the story arcs for the year.
Yeah.
And it was on one of these such retreats where he's like, you know that little piece you put in here, and you know that little piece I had you put in here, and that little piece? And, like, they said everyone's jaw dropped, you know, when he said, now here's the story that we're doing, you know.
That's amazing. I would imagine that kind of manipulating an entire universe that way could go to your head. I have the power to make it all happen.
Genesis of every supervillain there is.
Yeah, right. But, if it works out, it works out.
I do say Bendis is the greatest supervillain in comic books history, but he's killed more superheroes than anyone. He's created his own universe.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. It is very possible.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, because we usually keep these around an hour, but I wanted to ask you this before we're out of time. You were just up here at the Brandywine Music Fest.
I was.
Wasn't that you?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay. being a musician myself, and unfortunately I wasn't able to make it out. I was going to ask, A, what do you play, and how was the festival?
The festival was amazing. The Brandywine Collective, it's just filled with just raw, talented people that know how to put on a great party and know how to treat people really well. So if you ever see their brand on anything in the Westchester, Philly area, go do it. You know, you'll have fun, you'll meet a lot of good people, and you won't regret it. As far as what I do, I am currently playing bass in a band called Quiet, which Quiet makes a few cameo appearances in The Dead.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of those world-building kind of Easter egg things. You'll note in, I think, like, one of the pages, there's a room, there's a setting that's a bar, and in this bar there's always a band on stage, and that band's always Quiet.
Okay.
So, like, kind of bleeding reality into fantasy on that one. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
All right, I'm actually looking at it right now. Yes, there you are.
Oh, that's not me. I try to stay out of the spotlight as far as the band goes. It's really bad because there's a lot of the times where I can't make shows. So because I'll be doing like comic conventions and things like that, and they've been really nice to let me kind of have that freedom to go and do both things.
Yeah, I mean, if the comic thing doesn't work out, you can always fall back on your music.
Yeah, well, you know, or it's like, what's the band Cage the Elephant? Their drummer is a comic writer or artist, and we've seen him at shows before. And then you've got the Amore Wars.
Right.
What's that band? It's skipping my mind right now. I'll think of it later, and later I'll just like be like, ah, it's this band, and that'll be it. But yeah, it's really funny because I think I read a comic online as a web comic that was talking about how to break into the business, and they said start a band, get really famous, get an agent, and have them pitch that to, you know, a publisher.
You're not talking about Gerard Way, are you?
Oh, I have no idea.
He was in what was the name of that band he was in? My Chemical Romance. That was it.
Yeah,
he created Umbrella Academy. Yeah, I mean that's the road that he went down.
Right. The guys that I was thinking of, Coheed and Cambria. That was it.
Oh yes. Okay. All right. I know their music. I didn't know one of those guys wrote a comic as well. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole series. I mean, it's. I have I think 5 trades of it, and I haven't started it yet. But apparently, people are fawning all over it. So. Must be doing something right.
Cool. Yeah, no, Gerard Way was just on on I think it was Fat Man on Batman, and no, not Fat Man on Batman, The Nerdist, and he was talking about how he'd always wanted to be a comic book writer, and he just kind of fell in with these guys, and the band started, and the band took off.
Yeah,
you know, and then after he got famous, he all the doors were open for him, so he could write comic books at that point.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's one of the many ways to make it happen, I guess.
All right. So there you go. Just become famous. It's that easy, boys.
It's that easy. Go out there, become famous, make lots of money, and, you know, the rest will fall into place, really.
I think so.
It's amazing that more people aren't doing this.
We should have a disclaimer. Becoming famous does not necessarily make you a good comic book writer.
Yeah, right.
That is true as well.
And if you're famous and your comic book writing doesn't make it, well, then who cares? You're famous. You're rich and famous already.
Yeah, the worst thing is going to be like if that Cassandra complex kind of thing where you do something that's everybody should listen to, but nobody pays attention to it. It's always in the back of your mind, man. And I imagine that's for any creative endeavor, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a hard wall to kind of get past from time to time.
Oh yeah. Yes, I'm not. I'm a musician, but I don't play in bands anymore because
just too much pressure, man.
Too many issues.
But overall, you know, it's always coming back to, I'm finding that it's always coming back to comics, you know, no matter what I do. Like I was working with a newspaper in Marietta, Ohio, and had a friend that did, you know, 4-panel comics, and we got together and did a 4-panel comic, and all of a sudden there's a comic in the newspaper, you know. Right. working with the band, having them do cameos in the Dead. I mean, everything it seems that I do, all it magically has a comic edge to it once I get into it. So that's another way that you kind of know what you're supposed to be doing, is if you keep falling back to that thing, you know.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, it sounds like your path is being chosen for you.
Yeah, it's your destiny, man.
Yes,
but it, you know, the like I said, once again, the best thing of it all is, though, the reason that you kind of keep going back to it is holding that book in your hand, you know, seeing it all the time and labor and all that stuff that you put into it actually being read and appreciated, and you can put it up on your bookshelf and be like, oh, all right, on to the next project. That's really what kind of hooks you. It addicts you. That, yeah, makes you into this constantly working beast or story factory, I guess.
Right. Actually, and you know, it's funny that leads into a question that I actually like a lot of, asking a lot of our guests, because you just said, you know, you have that printed book in your hand and you can put it on your shelf. Yep.
So, here it comes.
just a curiosity. I'm pulling all our guests. How do you feel about digital comics?
I love them. I love digital comics. I love what Mark Waid's doing with Thrillbent. I love Comixology. I think that more and more digital comics are going to be a very, very good thing for comics. We went through graphically when we were first dabbling in digital comics with Nightmare Unknown, and they were showing me stuff that, you know, you could have the page and you could flip back the page and have the inks, and you could flip back another page and have a layer of that's just the pencils. So you could kind of do this fully immersion, interactive kind of presentation with it. You could do director commentary where, you know, an audio file of the writer, creative team, whatever, talks to you about the page you're looking at. I mean, just there's so much to be tapped into, you know. And I don't know if this might work really well for horror comics. There's this app on the iPad right now called, I think it's Haunted Melissa or something like that.
Okay.
Where it's an app, and they release these clips or chapters, you know, every week. And it's a spooky little story. A little, you know, Blair Witch-ish, where it's all first-person cameras most of the time. Mm-hmm. But it's really cool because you finish the episode, and then when you go back and watch it again, you'll notice all these little details that have been like spliced out or switched out, or, you know, it makes you wonder, did I actually see that? You know, you can do that in digital comics. You can branch off to different things in digital comics. I really think that it's a good thing. Now, that being said, is it going to replace print? No. Because I love my bookshelf, and I worked really hard on my bookshelf, you know. Right. And when I look at my iPad and go through all the comics in this list that I'm scrolling through, it's not the same, you know, as standing in front of this wall of books that could kill you if they fell at that moment. It's a little bit of fear, you know. You hope they don't notice you, kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. For me, you know, the conventions run off of print comics for the most part. Well, print comics and live art, you know. But if I guarantee that every book that I love that's in my digital collection is on my bookshelf too.
So how are you getting yours out then? And you can plug yourself a little bit for, you know, where to get your stuff.
Oh, right now, you can buy my Broken Icon titles, Nightmare Unknown and The Horror Show, through brokeniconcomics.com. Also a bunch of other really fantastic stories. I kid you not, we've got an editorial process for any book that we put up on Broken Icon, so, you know, they're good stuff. As far as The Dead, we're releasing a page a week just to kind of gain a readership, you know, because the theory right now, and I could be completely off base, but the theory is if I go to a publisher and I already have kind of this base readership that's digging what I'm putting out there, it might make them a little bit more interesting or interested in the title itself. So what we've done is for the past couple of months, we've been putting out a page a week, and that's on my personal site, which is jamesmaddox.net. But other than that, yeah, I'm kind of, I don't like to release things until they're pretty well done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like Clown right now, I'm not going to be putting that out anytime soon. We've just finished preview pages for Blue Nemesis that we'll be handing out at Baltimore Comic Con and New York City Comic Con. And we might have preview pages for Clown there too. But I tend to like to have at least 20 pages of finished work to show people. That way I'm not jumping the gun, you know?
Right, right. No,
there's nothing worse. That's the worst thing that an indie comic person can do is jump the gun and try to get like scrounge up together something that looks kind of like a finished product and then have people wait until they don't care anymore, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, most of the times you're just going to have to find me at a comic convention, which I go to so many comic conventions. I think we've done thousands and we've put thousands and thousands of miles on our car this year, just driving to Motor City Con in Boston and Baltimore coming up. We did just a number of Comic Cons.
Do you ever do Rhode Island?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Someone turned me on to that. I haven't been there yet, but I met someone earlier this year. And it's coming up. I have to put that information on our website. And basically, it's kind of the story of you guys with the Tri-State Comic Con. Uh-huh. This guy put it on. He puts it on at the Rhode Island Convention Center. And it's like this convention that, though a lot of people haven't heard of, but he gets really big names to come out to it.
Yeah.
And they don't get a super huge crowd there either. You know, they get a decent crowd, but not a super huge crowd. So,
Well, we were at Boston and just floored by the amount of people that walk through those doors. And, you know, being a Comic Con organizer, I'm looking at each of them with this kind of price tag over their head, like, oh my God, look at all the money that's being made, you know? but for the most part, like the smaller shows are, the Boston Comic Con, let me see how I'm going to word this. Boston Comic Con is where I go to meet people, mm-hmm. you know, like I talked to Dan Didio, Mark Chiarello, and, you know, just go and talk to people that I need to talk to, you know, and network. The smaller shows like, you know, Gem City in Dayton is fantastic for the indie guys. You know, and I would say the same thing. Lexington Comic Con is an amazing show for the indie guys. Tri-State Comic Con, the guy, you know, because we've done the circuit so many times that a lot of the people that come to our shows are our friends. And, you know, we'll talk to them afterwards and they'll tell us that they made more money here than they did at this big show. And I think it's because, yeah, we have larger name guests, but we don't do pop culture at our show. I think right. We have like just last year we had two of the walkers from The Walking Dead. Like one was a swamp zombie that, you know, had a leading role there for a bit. But, you know, it wasn't like we brought in Norman Reedus.
Right.
You know, because that's going to detract from the people who are going to spend money on comics. Because probably if you bring in these bigger names, they're going to spend money getting tickets and standing in line for hours and hours. And all that money that's being spent and all that time that's being spent on these pop culture people, they're not turning around and spending it on comic books, and especially not indie comic books.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's one of the things I talk about on this podcast a few times is that, you know, nerd culture is becoming pop culture, but at the same time, it's taking away from what nerd culture really is. And, you know, like you said, I've been to a lot of the bigger cons. It happens in Philly all the time anymore.
Yeah.
People walk right past Artist Alley and head over to the autograph area, yep. You know, and it's like,
And it's great for the convention organizers because they're going to make the money off that door. And it's great because they can afford to bring in bigger names that might, you know, get those indie guys noticed. But for indie sales, no.
Right.
It's not there.
Yeah. No, and that's true. I mean, because I, you know, it's sad. You know, you go back 12 years ago to a convention, you know, before the movies really started taking off. And, yeah, the artist alley would still be crowded, you know. And now you can, you know, stand in artist alley and no one has a crowd, you know.
Yeah.
Just very few, you know, the big names that are there. But then that's it, you know, that the indie guys are just, you know, and you hear them saying, oh, I don't know if I can do this show anymore, you know.
Right. Well, and that's another big problem. And I'm not going to single out Wizard World because, you know, they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I am going to single them out.
Go for it.
Their tables are so expensive when you know you're not going to make money.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. It's, am I going to choose to do a Wizard World show when I could just pay for a day pass and go and meet the people I need to go meet? Or am I going to, you know, use that money on something like, you know, Lexington Comic Con because I know that I'm going to make some money there. Probably right. I want to go with Lexington and save for artists.
No, definitely. You know, and that's the thing is if they keep – because they raise their prices every year and – if they keep it up, eventually they're going to keep losing more and more of the small guys.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's going to become the comic book fans won't be coming to the shows. You know, you just have the people interested in getting autographs, but they're not buying other things. So then vendors will stop coming, and then, you know, then that'll kill the convention. You know, I think they need to really rethink that, you know, and just make it affordable.
I don't know if they're making money or losing money, but you're always going to hear that commentary of these big shows are pop culture based and not comic based anymore. We've strayed away from that just because we don't care. I don't care about Elijah Dushku coming to a show. Sure, I'd like to have a conversation, you know, with the pop media guests that they have and, you know, get a little insight into that world. But for the most part, when I go to a comic show, I'm going to buy a stack of indie comics and another stack of things from the vendors of the mainstream stuff and go home happy, you know, and not so much worry about autographs. I'm the worst person in the world to give a comic book to. If you have this comic that you absolutely love and you, you know, don't want it to get red or creased or anything like that, do not give it to me.
No, they're meant to be read.
Yeah. I think I have maybe two comics in bags and boards, and all the rest are just, you know, shoved into a drawer. God, I'm losing readers as I talk.
No. They want to know that you love the medium, that you, you know, enjoy reading it. Yeah. No, and it's funny because I'm definitely with you there, too. You know, I'm the guy who's in Artist Alley, and I'm looking for the independents that pique my interest, you know.
Yeah, they're out there, man. They are completely out there. Assailant Comics is a guy that's doing some really good stuff right now. You can find really good stories.
But I have a suggestion for your next pop culture guest.
Okay.
Ben Affleck.
Oh yeah, I was thinking, let's just go out and get Ben Affleck.
Well, I mean, come on, Daredevil and now Batman, so he has to come, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, I'll see how much he wants to make an appearance.
So I need to ask, because it is the hot button at the moment, what are your thoughts on Ben Affleck being Batman?
On Batfleck? I don't know, I mean... My introduction to Ben Affleck was Mallrats.
Me too.
So to see the guy from Mallrats don the cowl, you know, I'm not going to say no because the talent was really good. He's done some good stuff as much as he's done some bad stuff.
Right.
But I'm not one of those guys that's going to be like, oh my god, Ben Affleck's not going to be Batman. I'm going to start a petition, you know? So, yeah, I'm kind of on the fence until it happens. I just hope it doesn't turn into one of those Spider-Man kind of things where they do so many movies and they're like, oh, yeah, we screwed that up. Let's go with another one. Oh, we didn't do very well on that one either. Let's think it over again. So, well, I'm just hoping that they, because I mean, they put together a really good trilogy for the initial Batman, you know, for Nolan's Batman stuff. Mm-hmm. I kind of shared a lot of Mark Waid's thoughts on Man of Steel. I loved it to death and I hated it to death at the same time.
Yeah, it's about right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, I would rather read a comic book, to be honest.
Okay.
I would love to have like the strong opinion of comic movies and things like that, but quite frankly, I'll go and I'll spend my money and I'll be like, oh yeah, that was good, or no, nah, maybe not, and then I'll go and read an actual comic that I know is going to deliver.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, and I agree with that. And you know, to everyone listening, yes, go out and read the comics. Don't worry about don't go out and worry about the movie. Go read, you know, The Long Halloween. Go read The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah,
The Killing Joke. You know, learn about the character Batman. You know,
and that's the thing. I think I do understand that it's exposing, you know, a character like Batman to a much bigger audience, and that audience is going to glean what they get from that movie and apply it to what they think the comic industry is doing.
Right.
So it can be detrimental in that way, but I don't see it being completely like a wrecking ball to the comics industry.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I want to know. And, we didn't get a chance to ask this when we were talking to Jeff is, how have sales changed, you know, as these movies are coming out and doing well, are they affecting them at all? Are they,
I would imagine they are,
you know, well, you know, from what I heard, like, it didn't really help DC, but when the New 52 came out, then their sales went back up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the New 52, a lot of people are very critical of the New 52. I thought at the time that it was done, I think it was a very good idea to hook a lot of new readers.
Mm-hmm.
So from a business standpoint, maybe, I could be argued out of this either way, but my initial reaction was like, oh yeah, we're going to have a lot of new comic readers join the fray, you know?
Right. No, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, the one that I really liked was, Court of Owls going into it, but from my understanding, when Snyder wrote that, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When Scott wrote that, he wasn't being told you're launching the New 52. It was, this story will be the first of the New 52. So right. It wasn't written as I'm rewriting Batman's history. It was just written as a well-written Batman story.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think, why I liked it, you know, but now it's like, you know, like Superman had jeans and, and he's hurting people, you know. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm into this.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. They're like Resurrection Man. I picked that up as soon as it started coming out,
mm-hmm.
and was really sad that they stopped it. I had some really good ideas for Resurrection Man.
Maybe you can resurrect him.
But the basic idea of it, I don't know. I've read some that are done really well. I've read a lot that are done really well. I've read a few that I thought could be better. I thought Animal Man was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Jeff Lemire rocked that one out of the park. So it's all just kind of a wait and see game at this point, I guess, because you're going to find stories that you gravitate toward, and then you're going to find stories that you don't really kind of, that doesn't kind of hit you in the heart, you know?
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, you know, again, they rebooted the entire universe and, you know, to hook new readers, and that's tough. I mean, it's tough selling that apple, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they said,
it's, even, it's even tougher when you jump online and you just see this massive amount of hate, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the internet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Our home, but, you know, we embrace the hate.
Embrace the hate. It's, I don't know. I tend to give stories a chance and hope that they come out okay.
Yeah. All right.
This was interesting. I always wondered how long it would take for me to cover all the things that I'm interested in comics. I think we've done just about everything.
Well, there you go. This is your origin story. How's that? So before we wrap it up, you know, you did plug some of your stuff. Is there anything else you want to tell the listeners to look out for?
For now, just keep an eye out, you know, for Blue Nemesis, especially because we're going to be doing a lot of stuff with that. I mean, for me, I like to do things simultaneously, and I know that kind of sometimes backfires as far as the promotional stuff happens because mm-hmm. I'm coming out with the horror show and the Dead and Blue Nemesis and the Clown and stuff like that. But Steve and I are sitting down and talking about just some fantastic little promotional surprises that we're going to be doing for the next couple of months that are going to be a lot of fun and hopefully very interesting, and hopefully it'll grab a lot of reader attention too.
Cool. Yeah,
and if you want to see a few preview pages of Blue Nemesis, jamesmax.net, it's up in the tab. You can see, I think, the first 5 pages. I might put a little bit more up there in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Yes, and Steve did post a couple of different things.
Cool.
On his Facebook page. Looks good so far.
Yeah. I tell you, it's – honestly, I keep telling people this. It is – one of my most favorite things I've ever come up with in my life. Every time I think about what's going to happen in that story, it kind of makes me like do the, you know, evil laughter thing. I don't know. I'm sitting in a room empty and I start laughing maniacally. It's a problem, really.
Okay. Okay. Well, don't ruin it for us. We're waiting on bated breath.
Yes, yes. Yes.
And don't forget when it comes out, you know, we hope to have both you guys back on to talk about it.
Oh, most definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, on that note, as I say every week to our listeners, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week. Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak. Reach me very easily at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John. You can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. And if you want, there's our Twitter account @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.